Are you nicer than God? So many Christians today are nicer than God, or at least they try to be. Jesus was often very harsh with his rebukes in the Bible, but many Christians today would say such behavior would not be Christ-like. Bob Benyart teaches from the scriptures that sometimes being nice isn't loving. Nicer Than God is available by calling 1-800-8-NYART, or you can get the MP3 CD or the MP3 download at kgovstore.com.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Benyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. I'd like to tell you about the show coming up on Wednesday when we'll have a guest in studio, Chris Peltz. His show airs on the same radio station an hour earlier, and we'll be talking about wine. Alcohol, does the Bible prohibit alcohol? We did this a week ago or so, and now we'll do it again in studio. That'll be interesting. I'd like to tell you more about that in a moment. Also, I'd like to tell you about Friday night's Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship with mathematician James Nickel. And wow, was that a fascinating meeting. Were you there? If you missed it, I'd like to tell you the basic gist of his presentation and how it relates to the whole creation evolution issue. Also, in Japan, they now have a strain of an STD, a sexually transmitted disease, gonorrhea, for which there is no known treatment. And America is not one of the countries with one of the higher rates of gonorrhea. But even still here, we have 700,000 new cases of gonorrhea diagnosed annually. The percentage of the population that gets gonorrhea is really high in places like Southern Africa and the South Pacific, where it's just absolutely epidemic, horrendous, beyond what it is here. And the STDs here are bad. In Japan, gonorrhea now, because we've been fighting it for so long with antibiotics, and when you do that, you end up with strains that are resistant. And now there's absolutely no known treatment, and it could become a worldwide crisis. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that when they say that there are victimless crimes like adultery. If you have consenting adults and it doesn't hurt anybody. No, it doesn't hurt anybody until it kills somebody. So we could talk about that. And death panels, whenever you have government health care, national health care, whenever you have that, you end up with death panels. And there's a case in Britain right now, a 22-year-old gal who a year ago, she was perfectly healthy and she was diagnosed with gastroparesis, where her stomach is paralyzed. There is a treatment for it. It's a surgery. It costs about $22,000 U.S., She's 22 years old. She's now shrunk to almost half her weight. She's a skinny, frail thing. And the government there has so far denied her request to have this operation because the government pays for your health care. And this is one of the consequences. There are many unintended consequences when you do the wrong thing, when you don't obey God. When you sin, this is one of many where the government ends up being the agent that decides who should die because their health care is going to cost too much. It truly is a crisis, and hopefully she will get her operation and survive. Her name is Rudy Hargreaves, 22 years old from Britain, and she's shrunk now to about half of her weight from just 1 year ago. Within weeks of being diagnosed with gastroparesis, she found that her clothes, which back then were size 12, Now, what does that mean, size 12 clothes? I guess women would know, right? And if it's the same here in the U.S., her size 12 clothes began just hanging off her. She knew that things were bad, and boy, have they gotten a lot worse. So now it's possible she could die. Here's what the government's saying. The government is saying, well, the reason we have not approved her operation is because her doctor has provided insufficient information. So that's because it's now a story. It's now been reported, right? So because it's reported and they don't want to look bad, which if you're with the government, it's hard to not look bad when the government is doing things that it shouldn't be doing, like doling out health care. That's not something the government should do. It's something Bob Dole would do, but it's something that the government, if it knew right and wrong, should not be doing. For those of you who don't know, Bob Dole was the Republican presidential candidate a few years back, and we lost one of our dearest friends from regular weekly fellowship because they were angry at me that I was exposing Bob Dole as a socialist, tax and spend, pro-abortion, pro-homosexual liberal. And our friends got angry at that, and they still, you know, they love us, and we love them dearly. I'm sure they love us dearly, but our weekly fellowship was cut off over Bob Dole, of all things. How could it be? How could you lose Christian friends over Bob Dole? I mean, it's just unbelievable. Over Bob Dole? I went into a hair-cutting salon, what do they call it, a barbershop, and I asked them, they said, what do you want us to do? I said, cut my hair. And they said, yeah, but what style? And I said, I don't know. Make me look forgettable, just boring. Just cut my hair. And they said, well, we need some direction. And I said, make me look like Bob Dole. And they said, who's he? And I said, exactly. Just make me look like him. He was running for president. They didn't even know who he was. His only qualification to be president was that he wasn't dead yet. And the Republicans nominate him, similar to nominating John McCain, who's also socialist, tax and spend, liberal, who's one of the two or three U.S. Senate candidates that they figured if Obama won, he'd be one of the ones who would side with him to pass the Democratic agenda. And that's been happening. John McCain is a lot closer to Obama than he would be, say, to you if you're a conservative Christian. So when you have socialized health care, when you have national health care, then the government doles out the health care and it decides who is going to be saved and who is not. This is not the role of government. The government should not be in that decision-making process. And so the government has to take a lot more money. You know how Obama wants about a $1 trillion tax increase right now? He's asking for a $1 trillion tax increase, and he's negotiating with the Republicans, and they want a $3 trillion. He offered $3 trillion in reduced spending. I'd like to see that. $3 trillion in reduced spending and along with $1 trillion in tax increases. That's all, just $1 trillion more tax because we're not in a recession or anything and there's no problem with jobs right now. So why not increase taxes? And what most people in the media are not pointing out is Obama's already got $500 billion of tax increases spread throughout the economy that's getting ready to kick in for his Affordable Health Care Act. Obamacare comes with about $500 billion in tax increases that are kicking in. Some are starting, some are about to start in the next year or two. So this isn't $1 trillion in tax increases based on the current baseline right now. This would be $1.5 trillion of tax increases, $1.5 trillion. And it wasn't too long ago, Obama was saying, you don't raise taxes when you're in a recession because it hurts jobs. So the government, when the government provides health care, they have to take money from you and use it to purchase your health care. And then you have a middleman. And you know, the bigger the middleman, quite often, the bigger his cut. Quite often. I mean, not always, but that's sort of the norm. And especially when the middleman has a lot of employees and a lot of overhead. And so the government becomes the middleman. And remember Hillary and her Hillary healthcare? Now, Obamacare is just the first step toward, it's not actually the first step. George W. Bush took the first step in nationalized healthcare. Well, that wasn't the first step either. That was probably the one, two, three. That was probably the third step. And so Obamacare is the fourth step. You recall George W. Bush, right? The Republican who gave us another $1 trillion entitlement program of prescription drug, government, middleman, all that stuff. So that's what Bush did. And he counts it as one of his greatest accomplishments to break the budget and give us another socialist government takeover of healthcare entitlement program. It's one of his greatest accomplishments. Certainly saving unborn children was not up there as one of his great accomplishments. So the government becomes the middleman, and the more the government regulates or controls an industry, typically the more expensive that the services or products of that industry become, the goods and services. So like computers, you know how computer prices have plummeted? They've plummeted over the last 30 years. Plummeted. Just imagine if 30 years ago the government said everyone should have a right to a computer. Everyone. You need a computer to function in society. So we have the Government Affordable Computer Act, and we're going to pay for a computer for everyone. Today, a typical home computer would probably cost $38,000 today. $38,000 instead of $900. And who could doubt that? If you doubt that, you've got to be sinful because you're in rebellion against God and you want the government to take money from people it should not take it from and give it to others. That's plunder. It's plunder. It's a form of theft. It's decriminalized plunder. And so here's Rudy Hargreaves. And thanks to her story being picked up by a reporter, she might not die. But in Canada, where they have full-blown national health care, where, you know, people from the U.S. do not swarm into Canada to get health care. That doesn't happen. But people in Canada swarm across the border to the U.S. to get health care, especially when they really need it. And they've got, what, an annual publication of The List in Canada? I think they just call it The List. How long people have to wait for routine health care and things that we would consider routine, like MRIs and simple operations and difficult operations, and waiting weeks and months and even over a year, and how many people die while they're on the list. So Rudy Hargreaves, she could die, but thanks to a reporter intervening, maybe the federal government there, maybe the government in Britain, they're from the federal government, they're, and they say, we're here to help. Maybe all of a sudden they'll find the sufficient information and decide to give her operation. But in Hillary care, which was closer to the goal, Obama's goal, see, Obama's just the fourth step toward full-blown government health care. And Hillary care was closer to the goal, to where Obama's headed. And Hillary care had mentioned jail, prison, about 20 times in her legislation, so that if you paid for your own health care, you'd go to jail. And if a doctor accepted money from you to pay for health care, he'd go to jail. About 20 times, Hillary care in the legislation for health care talked about who would go to jail and why they'd go to jail. because if the government is going to be the only purveyor, it's a one-payer system, then you can't work around it. It's like the government delivers first-class mail to the mailbox of each home. Are you allowed to do that? If you tried to offer a first-class mail service, they would put you in jail. You can't do it. So eventually, it would be a full-blown crime to just pay a doctor yourself. And you might say, you know what? The government thinks that my 13-year-old son shouldn't get this operation. There's not enough confidence that it'll save his life. But I'm going to sell my home, and I'm going to sell our two cars, and we're going to move into an apartment, scratch together every nickel we can to pay for our son's operation because we love him and we're willing to take the risk. We would do anything to try to save him. But if the government is taxing me at such an outrageous rate that it's legalized plunder, and even if I sell everything I have, I don't have enough to pay for the operation because they've been taking half of my paycheck for the past 30 years. And even then, I can't pay for it even if I want to. So people die. People die. And liberals, even sometimes Christians, make fun of people who care about money and the standard of living. And I'm all for a good standard of living because the opposite is dying. And I'd like my family to be able to live, and my friends and my neighbors. And Jesus said, who's your neighbor? So there are death panels. Wherever you have nationalized health care, you have death panels and you have lists. And when health care is free, that demotivates millions of parents from working harder so they could make sure that they could provide health care for their kids. Did you realize that? That you demotivate millions of human beings? And how are the Republicans going to... How are they going? Because Republicans are all for government health care also. They just want to pay for it differently, do it a little slower, do it a little smarter. I mean, when George W. Bush does it, there's hardly a peep out of the whole bunch of them. So don't believe them when they say it's a principle disagreement. It's a partisan disagreement. It's not a principle disagreement. It's a partisan disagreement. Death panel's real tragic, and please pray for Rudy Hargreaves, 22 years old, in England, that she'll get her operation and that America could somehow resist the socialism that's engulfing us and stand for what is right and help to be a pointer, a light to the world. All right, a little minor global warming note. I know that we're in for a heat wave over the next couple weeks, but in Montana, they have a 100-mile marathon foot race. Do you know about that? In Missoula, Montana. And the director of the race canceled it. It's canceled for the year. They race through the Flathead National Forest, and they run for 100 miles. And in order to finish, you have to complete it within 36 hours. And the reason they canceled the race is because there's so much snow in the forest on the roads and the trails that the markers are still covered in snow. The markers are still covered in snow. That's a lot of snow. And the race is supposed to, it's scheduled for 10 days from today, July 29th, 2011. And the director of the race, Brad Lamson, said that he's sure that the snow is not going to melt sufficiently by July 29th for people to be able to run the race and even see the signs for where the trail goes. Just a little bit of global warming news for you. You saw the news, the scientists who are blaming China for slowing down global warming. Did you see that? This is like the world's most official report on global warming for the last 10 years. And they said there has been now officially no global warming in the last 10 years. There was some warming in the previous 10 years, but now there's been none. And they say it's China's fault because of all their power plants and all. They're not only releasing carbon, but they're releasing other elements into the atmosphere that are counteracting their carbon footprint. And it's China's fault that we're not getting hotter. So bad, bad China. Bad China. We would have global warming if only China stayed in the dark ages. Maybe if they keep this up, China will be in the ice ages. So you could read all about that. Just Google bad China and global warming. You could read all about it. And then we have the tragedy that is now reported by Reuters, and it's out of Japan, just happens. I mean, different STDs, different strains will develop in different parts of the world at different times. So we have in Japan what they're calling a superbug strain of gonorrhea, and scientists are saying that after decades of easily treating gonorrhea with antibiotics, and even though the gonorrhea bacteria would change in order to survive in the midst of an antibiotic being injected into the host organism, into a person, they said that now they've got a strain. It's alarming because nothing will kill it, nothing. It's real serious, of course, if you have gonorrhea and it cannot be treated. It's real serious, and it's the consequences have to do with fertility. Women and men, there's infertility problems. In women, there's ectopic pregnancy problems. There's pelvic inflammatory disease. And, of course, other embarrassing problems. In the U.S., we have about 700,000 people a year diagnosed with gonorrhea. I'm sorry, that's not diagnosed. That's the estimated number of cases. Of course, not everyone with the disease is diagnosed. The rates of coming down with gonorrhea are far higher in Southeast Asia and southern sub-Saharan Africa. So real difficult situation. And liberals, they laugh about sexual immorality, promiscuity. They just laugh. And they talk about consenting adults, and they think it's fine if you have consenting adults. And then when one of those adults goes home to his wife and gives her gonorrhea, are they still laughing? Maybe they're still laughing. And then when the marriage breaks up and the children's hearts are broken, I guess the liberals are still laughing. And they say that these are victimless crimes, and that's because they're so hard-hearted. They don't care enough to look at the children, look at the families, look at the marriages, look at the lives and the destruction that comes from disease, for one, and from depression, and from the rebellion against God that sexual immorality involves. And, of course, the same with homosexuality, lesbianism, male homosexuality, fornication, adultery. These things destroy people. They simply destroy people, and liberals only laugh. They just laugh about it. And it's not funny, of course. And now we have what is potentially a global public health threat. And all along, the liberals will just be laughing and saying, these are victimless crimes. This is not a crime. It's not hurting anybody. And how many people have been killed in the past decades by sexually transmitted diseases? How many people are dead? Dead. Dead. It's in the millions of people are dead. So these are not victimless crimes. Now, we're almost out of time. Friday night was tremendous. Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship once a month, the second Friday of every month. Mathematician James Nickel spoke. He was on the show on Friday also, on Real Science Friday. And he pointed out that mathematicians often make discoveries before the astronomers and the physicists and the geologists. Mathematicians often make the discoveries first. And all the other scientists are looking at the world. The mathematicians are not. The mathematicians turn away from the world. They turn their back to the world. They close their eyes. They think, and they make discoveries. And how is it? Einstein pondered this, and he said he just couldn't comprehend it, how math does such a fabulous job. How can mathematicians make discoveries without looking at the world? How? Why? And the reason he couldn't answer it, you should look at this at AmericanRightToLife.org. Just put /Einstein, and you'll find his quotes on this. Einstein in his own words. And the reason he couldn't understand is because he denied the existence of a creator God. And so James Nickel pointed out that the creation began with thoughts in the mind of God. God thought up geometrical proportions and shapes and linear equations the way an architect would do. He thought it up, and then he built the universe based on those mathematical ideals. And so that's why, because he made us in his image and his likeness, we could think God's thoughts after him. So turning away from the world, mathematicians have made discoveries that have taken scientists decades or centuries longer to make. That's so cool. Just add that in your bag of evidence for the creator and how atheism leaves you in ignorance. And a lack of understanding about the world that we live in. And then finally, 2 days from now, we'll be welcoming Chris Peltz into the studio. He has a show an hour before this on KLTT, AM 670, 50,000-watt Colorado Christian radio station. And we're going to talk about wine. On his program, they said that the Bible teaches that drinking wine is a sin. And, of course, here at Bob and Yurt Live, we say the opposite. The Bible teaches that you can drink wine to celebrate at a wedding feast, at a joyous occasion with your meal, but that drunkenness is a sin. Drunkenness is a sin. And sometimes they'll say, well, wine back then wasn't strong. Well, if it wasn't strong, we wouldn't have needed all those prohibitions against drunkenness. It was plenty strong. Just ask Lot's daughters how strong wine was, and they could tell you, the mothers of Moab and Ammon. So we'll welcome Chris Peltz to the studio, and we'll talk about this, because if you obey God, you become conformed to his image. If you obey men when they speak for God, then you become more like those men. And that's why the Apostle Paul slams legalism and men making up their own rules of righteousness. Hey, we're out of time. May God bless you.